The vast majority of women in substance abuse treatment and the public mental health system report a history of trauma, with the abuse most often occurring in childhood. The high stakes of childhood trauma will come into focus at tomorrow's Women to Women Giving Circle Fall Forum. The panelists are ISU School of Social Work Director Doris Houston and McLean County Attorney and Guardian Ad Litem Brenda Tempke. Tempke tells WGLT's Ryan Denham there are between 200 and 300 kids in the child welfare system in McLean County. And how many of them have a history of trauma?
Probably about 100% of them. Because even just in McLean County, most kids involved in our court system, juvenile abuse and neglect court system, are already in DCFS care and guardianship. So just the sheer act of pulling a child from their home and placing them in foster care is its own form of trauma. But underlying that, most of those kids have been in some kind of chaotic family system in any event, and that too carries its own forms of trauma.
What are some of the most common causes of childhood trauma?
One of the models that we in human services often talk about is called the ACEs model, or the ACEs framework, and that stands for Adverse Childhood Experiences. And in line with what Brenda states, there are certain forms of traumatic experiences that happen for a child who's under the age of 18, and there's research to show that the effects of that trauma, particularly if it's compounded, really impacts a child's ability to function socially, emotionally, intellectually, etc. And some of those adverse childhood experiences that are a part of what we would consider a traumatic experience include abuse and neglect, a parent who is an alcoholic or has a substance use disorder, a mother who's a domestic violence survivor, a family member in jail, a family member diagnosed with a mental illness, or a disappearance of a parent through divorce, foster care, death, abandonment, etc. So these are some of the childhood experiences that are part of what we would fit under the umbrella of childhood trauma.
What signs do traumatized children show? What are sort of the common behaviors that indicates there is a history of trauma there?
Well, what I see just through my experience with the kids in the courtroom are a lot of behavior issues. Some kids have sleep issues, nightmares, that kind of thing. By the time they get to teenagers, you see a lot of sexual promiscuity. You see low self-esteem. You see drug use. Just a lot of behavior issues.
And again, many times when you think of children, particularly younger children, they don't have the same capacity to verbalize their experiences. So if they've experienced trauma, a child's way of letting us know that they're hurting or that there's something going on that they need help with emotionally is through acting out. And some of those acting out behaviors then carry on if there's not the proper help or treatment. But I should say that one of the things that we in human services and particularly social work always like to let people know is that even though there may be a traumatic experience, children do have resilience and the ability to bounce back from trauma, particularly if they are surrounded by caring adults, and if they have those what we call protective mechanisms within their schools, their communities, their extended family, their foster family, that can help mediate the effects of trauma.
Unaddressed trauma can have long-term effects on the quality and even the length of a person's life. Can either of you talk about the long-term effects and if a child has an experience as a kid that, as you said, Doris, compounds and maybe something else happens and something else happens. How does that add up to who you are at 22 or 32?
Well, a lot of times I've been working in the child welfare services for the last 30 years. And so I've been in it long enough to see generations And kids that I was involved with as young children have become parents, and many times their kids are also in the system now because their trauma, they just don't know how to cope, or they are reliving what they know. And there's even been a couple of situations where we're into the third generation. But it doesn't always work that way. What's really nice to see is when you run into a child that you were involved with early on who's now a parent, and you don't run into them in the courtroom, and you see that they've managed to take advantage of the services that were offered to them and have learned how to get past it and move on successfully.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm here with Doris Houston, Interim Director of the School of Social Work at Illinois State University, and Brenda Tempke, Attorney and Guardian Ad Litem for Children in the Abuse and Neglect Courtroom in McLean County. They'll be the featured panelists at Wednesday's Women to Women Giving Circle Fall Forum, focused on the impact of trauma on children. It'll be held at ISU's Alumni Center. So we've just talked a little bit about the kind of the long-term, even generational impacts of childhood trauma. What about the effects of childhood trauma on women specifically? Are there any unique experiences to girls and then women in adulthood that you'll be highlighting at this event, which is focused on women?
Well, certainly, given the fact that many times women are in the lead role, if you will, in terms of parenting, the additional stressors of coping with one's own traumatic experiences that may have not been addressed properly, and to now have the added responsibility of parenting, can really be a cause for additional stress and concern, again, particularly if they're not the proper supportive mechanisms in place.
No, I think she's right. A lot of times what I see is the effect of partner abuse, and even just not necessarily the outright physical, but the emotional and the mental abuse, and how that impacts on a mother's ability to parent and just to cope in general. And it's insidious.
Sometimes individuals who've experienced traumatic experiences are using medication, using substances, either illegal or prescriptions that are being abused, and they're really self-medicating to mitigate the effects of trauma. So there's certainly also a host of physical health concerns that are related to trauma. And actually, the ACEs model, the Adverse Childhood Experiences, that model came about because of medical research through the Kaiser Permanente organization, along with funding from the federal government. But they were looking at the extent to which trauma affects things like high blood pressure, diabetes, and other forms of physical ailments. So with the thought that if the trauma can be, and stress, if those things can be addressed, healed, et cetera, that would really help an individual with any physical ailments that they would have.
And you have both been in this world for quite a while. And I do wonder how the research has evolved over the years, and our understanding of the impact of childhood trauma, how that understanding has changed actual frontline folks like you, Brenda, and what you do. What did we know about childhood trauma 25 years ago, 30 years ago?
I was always the generation where when parents argued, as long as they did it behind closed doors or not in front of the kids, then the kids were fine. It didn't impact them. And we know now that that's just not true. And I think one of the things that really was a light bulb moment for me was how the effect of, in particular, domestic violence and just the chaos that surrounds households where the abuse is just prevalent, how that the science shows that that changes a child's brain chemistry. That, to me, was really an eye-opening revelation. I don't know off the top of my head, but the studies have shown that it really and truly changes how a brain functions, and it shows up in MRIs and that kind of thing. So knowing that it really is vitally important to address that early on. And that's one of the main areas that we focus on in juvenile court is getting help for the parents to understand that even if you're, whether you're the victim of domestic violence or the perpetrator of domestic violence or both, that it's essential that you address the root causes of that in your own life and try to figure out how to cope and how to better deal with the stress that surrounds all that and how that impacts your children. Because a lot of people don't really understand the detrimental effect that that has on your children.
In the last few years, the term trauma-informed has become attached to many parts of the social safety net or K through 12 education. What does trauma-informed really mean? Can either of you help our listeners get their arms around that?
The term trauma-informed really means that we're looking at these events that have been difficult for a child or their family, stressful events that have occurred that are impacting a child's behavior, their well-being, but we're looking at these events through what we call the lens of trauma or trauma focus. So we're not, if a child is acting out, yes, we'd want to address the behavior, but we also want to dig deeper to look at what might have been some of the traumatic events in this child's background. So we're not just addressing the behavior, the outward behavior, but we're also really looking at those traumatic events, and some of them I mentioned earlier, to be able to get at the root cause or the underlying conditions related with that child's well-being.
What grade would you give our, you know, our schools, our justice system, our social service agencies when it comes to their ability to look through the lens of trauma as they see the kids that are coming across them? I mean, how well is it going? Are schools getting it? Are courts getting it? Are we adapting to this research as fast as it's coming at us?
That's a loaded question. I think that just the awareness of it is a huge step forward. And I think that the schools and the courts and the agencies are working to the best of their ability to try to catch up and to try to address it. A lot of it, of course, comes down to funding and not having the resources needed to provide the counseling that's needed or the follow-up services that are needed. So we're doing the best we can with the resources, limited resources that we have. We have a long way to go.
And Doris and Brenda, you're both speaking at Wednesday's Women to Women Giving Circle, a fall forum at ISU's Alumni Center. You're going to be, you know, in front of a room full of thought leaders and local decision makers. What are some things you want them to take away from your remarks? Where do you want their heads to be at when they walk out?
Well, one of the things that I always like to invite people to think about when I do a talk like this is, how can communities help? How can communities participate? And so as we talk about these issues of childhood trauma, we'll also talk about those protective factors. Some of those protective mechanisms or factors include caring adults that can step in when a family might be struggling, caring adults that might be able to volunteer their services at the schools to help fill those gaps. So I usually like to, again, leave people with some ideas and approaches to how they might be able to make a difference in their own unique way.
Brenda, what about you?
That makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that I think the main thing that I'm looking for is just more awareness. And if so many people really don't have an understanding of what the juvenile court system is all about. I mean, I just deal with a very small part of a great big picture. But so many people have in their minds that a courtroom setting is like a criminal trial or whatever, and there's, it's not like on TV. And the setup and the system itself is very different than what anyone else is used to or what they think of. And just an awareness of how the system operates and what role that you as an individual might be able to play to maybe do your small part to help a child or help a family in need.
That's Brenda Temke, attorney and guardian ad litem for children in the Abuse and Neglect Courtroom in McLean County, as well as Doris Houston, interim director of the School of Social Work at Illinois State University. They'll be the featured speakers at Wednesday's Women to Women Giving Circle Fall Forum, hosted by the Illinois Prairie Community Foundation at ISU's Alumni Center. I'm Ryan Denham.